Hey, this is not football related. Are you a golf fan at all? Do you like playing? Do you like watching it?
So I played when I was a teenager and was okay. And then kind of went away from it and did other things. And I've never gone back to it. It is it's on my bucket list to learn to play golf properly and competently get around a course. But I take an interest in it. I will definitely watch the final day of the Masters. Okay. And look, I remember like Danny Willett's from my part of the world. So it was great when he won it a few years ago.
It wasn't great for me. That was the one I've been one time. That was the year I went. And freaking Danny Willett won. And there's nothing, nothing against Danny Willett from your country. But I was just like, that was the year that Spieth collapsed on 12. So we were there. We're going to see this guy go back to back. And everybody's rooting for Jordan Spieth. And we watched Danny Willett win. And I'm like, it was such a buzzkill. Danny Willett. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it was the total opposite here because he won. And then like 3 days later, I'm interviewing a guy wearing a green jacket at his local course, which is like five minutes from my house. I've got a great picture of me and Danny Willett wearing the green jacket like two days after he flew back. I'll dig it out and I'll send it over to you.
Oh, please do. God, I want to see that. Yeah, it's and right now as we're talking about this, recording it, this is on a Thursday and it's underway. He actually is, whenever you listen to this, he's actually playing really well right now in the early goings there of the Masters. Yeah, it's just unbelievable. Danny Willett. I think we didn't even stick around on the 18th to see him finish because we were so mad that he ended up winning. Rob Staten's with us. Of course, that pretty face. PB, he got a lot of comments last week when he did the show from Dubai. A lot of people asking Rob or texting me, what kind of workout regimen is Sky on? The arms, the pythons, they were just bulging out. Rob is back home after spending some holiday time there in Dubai. A Seahawks draft blog. He joins us every week to talk Seahawks football, break down the draft, of course, that's coming up. It's all brought to you by Superior Linen Service. Family owned and operated since 1926, Superior Linen Service provides the highest quality of products and services to the greater Puget Sound area. Get a free quote today at suplinen.com. Give them a call at 253-383-2636. So was it a holiday for you? I mean, you still had to work. You jumped on this show for some reason. But are you able to kind of decompress and get away? Or is your mind still going all things Seahawks, NFL draft coming up?
No, so I was talking to somebody about this earlier and they were saying, like, what do you do? Do you just sort of switch off? Because obviously my day job is just to talk about English soccer. Right. And then sort of my evening sort of second job is to talk about the Seahawks and the draft. And because they are like my main interests in life anyway, I don't really want to switch off. So kind of when we go away, I spend time with the family. But as soon as the kids are asleep, I enjoy writing. It's my thing. So, we're in the room. We've got to be there with the kids anyway. I'll go and chuck an article out there. When I was on the plane, like 7 hour flight home, I've got nothing to do. I'm like looking, are there any films I want to watch? No. So I'll do a 4 round mock draft. And then I did that. So that's just, it's just how I kind of kill my time. I feel very lucky that I get to do what I love for a living. And it's the best thing in the world.
And wife's all on board with it.
She's, I don't want to say it too loudly because she might hear, but yeah, she is a superstar. Yeah, she's, I don't want her head getting too big though. Like she's completely on board with just how random, I will just want to do certain things. And I can remember when she gave birth to our, second child, and about 6 months later, I was heading to Seattle to watch the Seahawks play. So she lets me do things like that.
You got a good one, my friend. You got
the best. I'm very lucky. She's the best.
You got a good one. Okay, so of course, you can catch up Rob everywhere on social media channels. Just go Rob Staten there on Twitter and also on YouTube, SeahawksDraftBlog.com. All right, you got the latest mock draft. So did you write this on the plane, this thing, this 4 round mock draft, a Seahawks 7th rounder? I mean, this thing, it's unbelievable. I try to tell people all the time, there is no one that is writing in greater detail than you. And it's not, you just didn't do a mock draft, Rob, where everyone kind of just cherry picks what everybody else is doing. You've got trades, like multiple trades everywhere. This is incredible. How long did it take you to write this whole thing?
So kind of what I tend to do is I'm always, this is going to sound really sad, but I'm always writing a mock draft. Like there's always on my notes on my phone or on the laptop, if I ever find myself, you know, with 10 minutes to kill, I'm thinking about what could happen here. You know, what could this team do? You know, could the Vikings maybe stick and do something a little bit different than everybody's thinking? Just trying to think of different scenarios, because what it's just, it's always kind of like fluttering around in my mind. What's going to happen in the draft? Yeah. What are the Seahawks going to do? What are the other teams going to do? And it kind of just helps me sort of feed that beast a little bit by sort of doing mock drafts. And then on the plane, I didn't intend to do a 4-round mock draft. I just kind of sat there. Like say, if there was a great film, I would have watched a great film. It's not a great time for films, I don't think. So there was just nothing that I wanted to watch. Yeah. Even though there was like 100 films, I was like, no, I don't fancy any of those. So I started writing this, you know, just doing a mock draft in my head again. You know, my daughter's falling asleep on me and I'm like kind of doing the mock draft on the laptop. And I thought, you know, I'm just going to get my horizontal board out and I'm going to do a 3rd round. And then I did the 3rd round and I thought, yeah, but I've done the trades and the Seahawks have kind of got 2 picks coming up. So I want to do them. So I'll just do a 4th round. So the 4th round was done. I've never done a four round mock before. I can tell that this is now going to be a thing that I'm going to have to do every year. So I've sort of opened the floodgates for that. But I enjoyed doing it and it's there. And, you know, when you're projecting 130 odd players, you're going to get most of them wrong. But I think it's interesting to look through scenarios and look at what the Seahawks might actually do.
Yeah. All right. We'll tell it. We'll go through the top 10 here in a second, but I want you to go through what do you have the Seahawks doing? What did you project in your mock draft, SeahawksDraftBlog.com? What do you got John Schneider and Mike McDonald doing there in the 1st round?
So I had them initially trading down with Arizona of all teams, and people might say, well, why would the Cardinals trade with the Seahawks from the same division? But if anybody who's watched the video with the Cardinals GM from last year and his trade down, that's kind of gone viral on X. Mm-hmm. He was talking to John Schneider about potentially trading up to number 5. And then the Seahawks just decided they were going to take Devin Witherspoon. So these are teams that have talked in the past. I don't think it's beyond the realms of possibility that the Seahawks would do a deal with a division rival. They've done it with the Niners a few years ago as well. So I've got Arizona trading up from 23 in a pick they acquired from Minnesota. This is already getting complicated, isn't it? And the Cardinals sort of moving up to Seattle's pick to get ahead of Jacksonville to get Brian Thomas Jr. to be their wide receiver number 1 because they need one of those guys. So the Seahawks end up at 23 and then they trade down again with Washington. And because of the deals, they kind of end up turning the 16 pick into number 36. Number 66 and number 78. So it's kind of like 3 picks instead of 1, which, you know, I genuinely believe this puck, and I've been saying this for a few weeks. I think if Troy Fatanu is there or Talias Fuagra is there, the tackle from Oregon State, Washington, I think they will take one of those two players. They're just perfect fits. But if neither of those players are there, puck, I think that's the trigger to trade down.
Can the Oregon State guy, Fatanu, he can move inside. Can they both go inside and play guard?
Yeah, I actually think, you know, because I know a lot of people think Fatanu is perfectly suited to kick inside. I actually think Fuaga is a better prospect for guard than Fatanu. I think Fatanu is the best left tackle in this draft. He's not the prototype in terms of, he isn't 6'6", but he has great length for a guy who's 6'4". He's incredibly aggressive, very quick. You know, he does everything well. You know, he's so balanced. When he latches onto players, he finishes his blocks. He can get out on the move. He's fantastic in space. His kick slide's amazing. I don't see any flaws with this guy. I think he's going to go in the top 10. And if he lasts to number 16, I think the Seahawks will take him. And I think they will seriously consider playing him at right tackle. Because if Abe Lucas can't go, then, you know, you're picking him and you put him at right tackle. Fingers crossed, because I love Abe Lucas coming out. Mm-hmm. I hope Abe Lucas is going to have a long career in Seattle. But you have to have a little bit of fear that he's not going to be able to make it back.
Well, yeah, maybe a good problem to have, right? Let's say Lucas isn't ready. Let's say there's something wrong with Lucas. Okay, well, then you got your answer at right tackle. You're right. Fingers crossed Lucas is fine. But then the fallback plan is move him inside. I mean, I just think that sometimes, I mean, these offensive linemen, they can move around. They're so skilled nowadays. They're so much more athletic than they've ever been before. I think these guys, the interchangeable parts, and playing different positions. Maybe I think you can do it with guard and tackle. I mean, obviously center is kind of a center. I know they'll slide inside, play guard a little bit, but just watching him play, at least for me, just watch him and not being some scout and breaking down film and all that. He always looked like kind of a natural guard to me. Just his profile kind of looked like it. So I think just in watching, you know, the Huskies play this year, this past couple of seasons, that he'd be a natural at it. And we've talked about this before, I think on the last pod, we both kind of agree that I know it's cliche about building and winning through the trenches, but it's so true. It just is. All these teams that have this long sustaining success are all good up front. And this is the area for this team in particular where they just have lacked that. They've lacked that on both the offensive side and the defensive side.
You have to be able to go to, in the big games, you have to go to good teams, puck, and you've got to win in the trenches. It is a cliche, but it's one of those cliches that it absolutely rings true. You see it time and time again. Just look at the Super Bowl. The Niners were on top in that game and were in control against the Chiefs because they were controlling the line of scrimmage. It was only when they lost control of the line of scrimmage and Patrick Mahomes started doing his thing that the game became a lot closer. And in the end, Mahomes was the difference maker. But when the Niners had a grasp of that game, it's because they were winning up front on both sides of the ball. The Seahawks have got to get back to that. They've got to try and create an offensive line. It doesn't have to be like 5 first-round picks, but they've got to come up with an offensive line that can hit somebody in the face. They've got to find a defensive line that can create consistent pressure. When's the last time you watched a Seahawks defensive line really get after opponent, unless it's a really terrible opponent like the Giants last year and they can just blitz like crazy and have 8 sacks? Nobody fears the Seahawks in the trenches.
Yeah, and I think it gets back to, can they, like on the defensive side, right? Can they get pressure, like consistent pressure at the quarterback without having to send people? I mean, that to me, that's the difference maker with the great teams and the good teams. I mean, the good teams, they've got to send extra guys to get after the quarterback. The great teams don't have to do that. I mean, they'll do it once in a while. But the really great ones who are great up front, they just got studs who can beat their guy one-on-one. And then on the flip side, offensively, you know, the one thing that I go back to the Super Bowl year is they have just for a long time have been missing on the offensive line front. I think Cross has it. Lucas has it. But maybe Lewis a little bit. Just an attitude, an aggressiveness, a physicality that they just want to drive you into the ground. And Fatano, he's got that. I mean, that dude has got that. That is his MO. And I think that's what's been lacking. You know, when you mentioned going in a hostile environment, you know, when it's 3rd and 1 or 3rd and 2, man, I want the quarterback, I want Geno Smith to come in the huddle and say, we're going to blow their ass off the line. We need 2 yards. Can we do it? And the offensive line's like, yeah, break the huddle. Let's go kick their ass. And they've been missing that. It's been too finesse and too soft. And I hope, you know, were they improving that line if they can in this draft, Rob? And also, I think the addition of Scott Huff. We talk about Ryan Grubb. I think we've talked a lot about Mike McDonald and all these new guys. I bet you we'll look back on this if this is a success, this new regime. And I think the sneaky best hire will be Scott Huff, the offensive line coach.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. And I think the point that you make about when it's 3rd and 1, I just can't help but think back to that Dallas game last year, which was really close. And I think they had 3rd and 1 and 4th and 1, yeah. And they're trying to make tricky little plays, like where we're going to have we're going to leave Micah Parsons unblocked, whatever it was, and try and throw it. And it's like, you're trying to deceive opponents here. If you need 1 yard, you should be able, with your offensive line, to go up there and say, get us a yard in that running game. You just hand it off, you run behind your best block, and you go and get it done. And that's what the Seahawks haven't been able to do. And yet, the frustrating thing, Puck, and this is one of the reasons why I think a few of us got very frustrated with the end of the Carroll era, was that they constantly talked about having a team that could do that and then either made decisions with personnel that contradicted the vision, or they made decisions in game that contradicted the vision. Get back to that. If you want to be, you've hired the Baltimore Ravens defensive coordinator. You were stealing from the Harbaugh tree. Do what they would do. Build this team the way that they're going to build this team. The 4-round mock that I did was with that in mind. Get back to sort of building your trenches on both sides of the ball, trying to create a physical, violent football team. That's the kind of football I want to watch as well. I want to watch the quarterback throw it around and be fantastic. If you can get a legendary quarterback who can come and lead this team to a Super Bowl, amazing. But I also want to see a degree of violence there. I want to see I want teams to come to Seattle and hate every second that they're on that field. It used to happen every year. And now I think teams kind of come in. It's a bit of a party for them. You know, they get the cigars out at the end. It's been too easy for teams to come to Seattle. They've got to get back to that. Nobody wants the players. Everybody fears us. And right now, it's hard to sort of look at any facet of this team and go, there is an opponent out there that will be terrified of playing the Seahawks because they can do this. They need to find what their identity is.
Rob Staten, again, it's brought to you by Superior Linen Service. Rob joins us every week talking Seahawks and talking NFL. Of course, the draft is right around the corner. So on his mock draft that he just did, SeahawksDraftBlog.com, please go read it. Also, we're gonna touch base on the guest column written by Curtis Allen. I want to get to that here in a second. Number one, you got Caleb Williams. Of course, the Bears taking him. No surprise there. Number two, though, you go with Jaden Daniels over Drake May there for Washington. Why Jaden Daniels over May?
I think it's a pretty easy decision. When you watch Jaden Daniels, and I remember watching the first game of last season against Florida State, and he didn't play that well. I thought, he's not been able to take that next step. And then a rude thinking that after 1 week, because just as the time went on and you're watching LSU week after week, he just got better and better and better. And then by the end of the season, he was virtually unstoppable, you know, with his legs that he ran all over Alabama and Florida. He was throwing the ball downfield with accuracy. He was making, people were saying, oh, he's got Malik Nabers, he's got Brian Thomas Jr. He was making the most of those players as a deep ball thrower. He was just fantastic, but he won the Heisman. Listen, he was in sensational form. He has shown real development. He's a great athlete. He's going to be able to create with his legs and with his arm downfield. He has no limitations in terms as a passer or as a runner. You know, Lamar Jackson's just won the MVP in the NFL. And I think Washington will look at what he's been able to do with Baltimore and say, okay, we can do something pretty similar with Jaden Daniels. He just seems to me like a surer thing and a more spectacular player than Drake May, who has got some physical tools. I think they're a little bit overblown when people compare him to Justin Herbert and Josh Allen. I don't quite see that level of physical talent, but his footwork's all over the place. He had some really bad games at the end of last season. I think there are things to like about him. Some of the things he did, there was one play on tape last season where he's being tackled, and as his knee's about to hit the turf, he's being thrown to the floor by a defensive lineman, and he shovel passes the ball to the running back who's next to him, and they end up getting a first down for it. That's the kind of nonsense that Drake May is capable of. He has got that kind of no, yes aspect that Brett Favre had. But there are lots of technical things that you just think, that gives me pause for thought. He's probably going to need to redshirt for a year and work on that. So for me, it's Daniel's second, and then the Patriots have got a decision to make as to whether they're going to take Drake May at number three.
Right. The the one thing, just quickly wrap up with Daniels for a second. I think for a lot of people out here on the West Coast and Pac-12 fans, I think it's hard to get on board with the LSU version of Jaden Daniels, because all I remember is the ASU version of him. Mm. And when I watched the ASU version, I'm like, no, he wasn't even he was like the sixth quarterback, maybe the seventh quarterback in the conference. And so when there was this debate with the Heisman this year with him and Penix, I'm like, dude, Penix is so much better. But I'm also biased, and my vision is of the ASU version, not the LSU version of what Jaden Daniels turned into. And I think you bring up a great point. I think his improvement from when he left ASU and then in his 2 years with LSU has just been remarkable. And he's made himself a hell of a player that now is going to likely be, you know, the second overall pick, third overall pick. I mean, top five, obviously. The quickly on number four, you have a trade. I love all the trades you've done. This is the best because it's just not cookie cutter mock draft. You've got the Minnesota Vikings moving up to number four to select who?
JJ McCarthy, who I'm not, I wouldn't do this. And listen, Puck, in the last mock draft that I did, I pitched a different scenario. And I want to throw this out there because then if it happens, I'll look great. And if it doesn't come off, no one will remember this.
We'll praise you for anything you get right. We ignore anything that anybody else gets wrong all the time. That's what we do here.
So I just wonder a little bit whether, because initially it seemed obvious, they've gone and got the 23rd pick off Houston because they want to trade up, Puck. I just wonder, is there any possibility that they could have a different quarterback in mind? And that I get this, there's a bit of a rumbling out there that they really like Byron Murphy. They had him in, the defensive tackle from Texas, mm-hmm. for a meeting this week. Are they better off spending 3 first-round picks on J.J. McCarthy or spending on 3 first-round picks to make sure they get Michael Penix and Byron Murphy? For me, it'd be a no-brainer to come away with Penix and Murphy and making sure that you get those two players with your 2 picks. And if you have to give up next year's first, so be it. Then giving up 3 first-round picks for J.J. McCarthy, who is a major question mark. Yeah. And people have forgotten about all of those question marks because the intangibles are so good. But it looks as if he's going to go 4th overall, so good luck to him.
You know, it's weird, I think, with him. I think the version of you that you see of him, like in the playoff games and all the games this year, right, they never really leaned on him all that much. Fantastic offensive line, running game, defense superior. And there was never like, well, maybe there was one for you. I'm just trying to think back on the Michigan games. I don't ever remember like a wow moment or the JJ, they always say the Heisman moment. I remember the JJ McCarthy Heisman moment. Again, Michigan fans watching or listening to this right now are like, well, I can give you 15 of them. But again, just maybe in my limited viewing of them, I don't remember that moment. But I mean, you know, you hear about everything, the teammates love him, the leadership qualities. I mean, I'll be honest with you. I think as his stock rises, I think the way he looks and acts, he's very charismatic. The smile, he's got the quarterback look, right? Guy comes off the bus, he looks like the quarterback. I think some of that plays into this a little bit with McCarthy, but we shall see. Maybe Rob, that he is a really good quarterback. And it's just that Harbaugh and Michigan didn't hand over the offense to him because they just thought, hey, we're just so dominant running the game. We don't need him to be like this. Maybe it's a comp. That's they're two separate players, but remember Herbert in college. Like Herbert in college didn't do a lot. Now, because Cristobal just ran the ball all the time. I don't know if that's a fair comp because they don't play the same way, but I'm just, maybe the play calling just kind of dictated what they wanted to do.
It's undoubtedly true that they never truly felt they had to put a game on him.
Yeah.
The only thing is if the Vikings were 4th overall and they took a chance on him, I think you could say, well, why not? You take a chance on him 4th overall, whatever. It's a bit rich for my liking, but they take him. It's the fact that you are mortgaging your next draft as well. You're spending 3 first round picks on the guy. That's what makes me worry. It's not so much about taking a chance on him. It's if I'm spending 3 first round picks on a guy, I want to have seen him in college win a game of football off his arm. And we haven't seen that.
Yeah. You got Rome Odunze going number 6. Odunze is just fantastic. I mean, I just love everything about Rome Odunze. He's just, I mean, Marvin Harrison's great too, but there's just something different about Odunze. Of course, we're probably biased out here just because we watch him a little bit more. I'll quickly go down. 13, Michael Penix going to Las Vegas. I love this fit for him. I love it because you'd mentioned Minnesota as well, potentially. I love Michael Penix going to a spot where he's indoors. Fast track, doesn't have to deal with the weather, and just can let the ball fly everywhere. So I like that fit with the Raiders.
Well, it'd be great for him because, like you say, he gets to go indoors. He gets to throw to Devontae Adams, who, funnily enough, you know, and it's a bit rich to say that Rome Odunze has some of the similar traits to Devontae Adams, but I think he does. So, you know, and Penix just, every time he saw Odunze 1v1, I'm going there. Yeah. Devontae Adams would love playing with this guy. And then, you know, I think it would be a really good fit. You know, they do have some pieces on defense as well. So I think it'd be a fantastic fit for him. And I don't think he's going to get, I think he's going to go in the top 15. I think one way or another, Penix is going to be off the board by the time Seattle's on the clock.
Yeah. What do you want out of this draft? Like, and I guess you, and I guess I can even answer it, and I guess fans can answer this as well. If you're watching on YouTube, you can leave a comment below. What do you want out of this in order to get them out of this rut that they've been in here the last few years?
I want to come out of this draft feeling like they may have found, it's not even about the first pick for me. I want to see them come out of this draft with a handful of players that I think, okay, this is not just padding the roster out. These are players that can be contributors. And I know it's easy to say, oh, well, we didn't, nobody thought that about Richard Sherman, or nobody thought that about Cam Chancellor or whatever back in the day. But I kind of feel that's the type of thing the Seahawks need to do now. They've had two really decent drafts in the last 2 years with all of this stock from the Russell Wilson trade. And it doesn't feel like it's tilted the Seahawks towards being any more of a contender than they were. They've kind of just added a bunch of decent players. I want to see them go and find somebody in the third round or the fourth round, like when the Raiders went and got Max Crosby in the fourth round. Somebody who you get and you bring him in like you did with Sherman and Cam and people like that, Russell Wilson, who end up being top, top players for you, and you've not necessarily had to take them in the first round. That's what I want to see. That's my real hope from this draft. But also, I just want to see a nastiness and an edge to the Seahawks. I want to, you know, I want them to build up the trenches. I've kind of accepted that they're not going to find where they're picking the quarterback of the future in this draft. So my next big thing, Puck, is to just come out of it feeling like the Seahawks have taken a step forward, and that may be sticking and picking and just taking someone who is that good up front, who the rest of the NFC West are going to go, ah. And I love the idea of getting a defensive lineman who could do that. Right at the same time that the Niners have lost Eric Armstead and the Rams have lost Aaron Donald. Can the Seahawks be the team that has the great defensive line in this division moving forward? I'd love to sort of see that as the identity of Mike McDonald's Seahawks. Amazing D-line, taking control of the line of scrimmage moving forward. I'd love to see that, but I do think that their focus, it may be on the offensive line just because they've not done as much there.
In Rob's latest mock draft, up again at SeahawksDraftBlog.com, where, again, we're going to mention all these players. So when they do draft these guys, we circle back around and Rob gets a bonus for every one of these guys that he hits. Now, if he doesn't hit them, we don't mention it again. We bypass it and we move on. Third round, tell me about Christian Haynes, the guard out of Connecticut. You don't see a lot of guys coming out of Connecticut. You know what I mean?
You don't. And there was something really good with him is I actually went and watched UConn against Michigan last year. And they lost, I think it was something like 57-0. And this guy, they were like,
Is Morris still the coach there?
Yes.
Okay.
They were 42-0 down at the the end of the third quarter. And Christian Haynes is still playing that game like it's 6-6. I just love that about him. And that's how he was. Physical, aggressive, set the tone up front, good on the move, an athlete. I think he ran like a 5.03. He's explosive. He had a good jump in the broad or the vertical. I can't remember which one it was. One of them was better than the other. He went to the Senior Bowl, put on a good showing. I just think he is a plug-and-play guard who has got all of the characteristics that you want in a really good offensive lineman. And there's going to be a run on that on the guard position at the end of the second and the start of the third, where Cooper Beebe's going to go, Christian Haynes is going to go, Dominic Pooney at Kansas is going to go, and I think Zach Zinter will go in that range from Michigan as well. I think it's really important if the Seahawks want to get a guard without necessarily having to go first round, Puck, or drafting anybody to kick inside, they've got to get a pick between 65 and 75 to make sure that they get one of those guys, and that means trading down from number 16.
There's in all the scenario that Rob's done, there's a bunch of trades. So they've acquired picks in his mock draft. So like three, I think it's three in the third round. You got Theo Johnson, the tight end out of Penn State, 78th. And then the 81st one, let's talk about Dom Hampton, a safety out of Washington. Why do you think that if they were to go safety route and Hampton is it, why do you think Hampton would fit in what McDonald likes to do with his system?
I like this pick a lot. For the Seahawks, I think there's a decent chance that they're going to end up taking him. Because when you look at McDonald's defense, it is about having players who can line up in many different spots and you never know what they're going to do on defense. He played a load of deep safety snaps last year. He played a lot in the slot. He can play in the box. He even took some snaps at cornerback. Mm-hmm. He is that chess piece that you want at safety. Without costing you like a top 50 pick. He is physical. I asked somebody at Washington who I know, tell me about this guy. And he said, do you know what? He was probably the most important player on that defense and nobody understood it because it was such an important role. He had to be disciplined. He had to sort of know what the opponent was going to do. He had to get everything in order. And he did it perfectly. The other way he was described to me was he's a quiet killer. And you do see that when he hits people. You know, he's a blunt force attacker. He will hit people with his tackling. His tackling is good. And when you look at his physical testing, it's not too dissimilar in terms of size, speed, explosiveness to Kyle Hamilton. I think the Seahawks are going to need to get somebody like that for this defense to do what Baltimore did. But I don't think they need to do it like a lot of people think by going and getting Cooper DeJean, who's never played bloody safety in the first round. You can go and get this guy in the third round instead, or the fourth round. I think he's a terrific player.
Let's talk about the piece that you have up there also at SeahawksDraftBlog.com, a guest piece, Curtis Allen, who wrote that, not the former Washington basketball player and assistant coach, a different Curtis Allen. And he wrote up there about, and the title of it was, hey, this isn't the time to draft a quarterback. Like, I'm happy if they pass on a quarterback. They shouldn't do it. And why? Well, actually, the piece really is shouldn't draft a quarterback and maybe why they should. He gives two different opinions on it. Where do you stand on them potentially drafting a quarterback in this year's draft?
Puck, until they have somebody that we can refer to as the guy, they have to try and find the guy. They have to, and this is why I think they've had Bo Nix and Spencer Rattler in this week, the two quarterbacks who may be available to them depending on what they do. Right. You have to know what every class is offering, and you have to turn over every stone until you find the franchise quarterback. I know there are always teams, and people will always say, well, what about Nick Foles and the Eagles? And what about the fact that Brock Purdy, right? You haven't got Kyle Shanahan, so forget about finding Brock Purdy in the seventh round. Mm-hmm. You are going to have to draft at some point somebody who can get you into a battle with another great quarterback and win that game with a fourth quarter throw or a drive, whatever it is, to get the job done. They've got to find essentially what they had when they were, you know, winning Super Bowl, which was they have to find their next Russell Wilson. So they've got to try and do it. If that player is available to them, whether it's at 16, 81, day three, take that guy. You can't go, oh, well, they've already traded for Sam Howell. Somebody sent me a message saying they can't draft a quarterback because they've kept Geno and they've traded for Sam Howell, so that's it now. If John Schneider sees a quarterback that he loves, there's absolutely no way he's going to go, but we've got Sam Howell.
Of course.
He's going to draft that guy, and so he should. That is the number one need for this team until they address it. And if you can't address it, then you look at the trenches and you move and focus on that. But they have got to draft a quarterback this year or next.
Yeah, I just don't want them to. I don't want them to feel. I'm with you. I want them to get a quarterback. They've got to find a quarterback for the future. I don't want them to sit there and make like some type of mistake, maybe in this year's draft, or like, oh, we've got to do it. I've always wanted to do it, and Pete Carroll didn't let me draft a guy, and then now I'm going to grab this guy in the whatever round, and then they're like, well, maybe that wasn't really the good fit. I mean, it's got to be, and I know this sounds stupid because, duh, obviously, but it's got to be the right guy and it's got to be the right fit, and it just can't be making a pick just for the sake of we need to draft a quarterback. But I'm with you. I think we're all in agreement. I think most Seahawks fans are in agreement that they need to find a quarterback of the future for this football team. All right. Before we let you go, we have 2 weeks. What for the draft next week? We'll hit the draft even harder with you. Let everybody know, what do you got up at SeahawksDraftBlog.com right now? What are you working on? What's up there now? What's in the future?
So as you mentioned, the fourth round mock draft's on there. I've got some interesting interviews lined up, and we're hoping to have a conversation with Troy Fatanu this week. So that's going to be up on the channel, on YouTube, and on the blog. So looking forward to that. But it just ramps up now. So I'll try and find out things. I will try and talk to different people. You know, we'll get guests on as like insiders who are guests to come on and say tell us what they're hearing, and then just a whole bunch of articles sort of reviewing it. I'll finish off a final horizontal board. Listen, the next 2 weeks are the busiest on the blog, so I'll just be there. You know, SeahawksDraftBlog.com. Make sure you don't miss any of this because we're on the home stretch. We've got 2 weeks to go.
He's the best. Go read all of his work, SeahawksDraftBlog.com. Check his YouTube page out at Rob Staten. Follow him on social media at Rob Staten. He joins us every week, every Thursday, brought to you by Superior Linen Service. All right, Rob, until next week, we'll talk to you then.
Thanks, man.
All right, there he is, Rob Staten. And that will be up later. Mike Garofolo also coming up later here at PuckSports.com. We'll talk to you soon. And as always, we promise to be better.
No shoes, no dice.
Would anybody like to smoke some pot?
Yeah.
I was born to love you. I was born to lick your face. I was born to rub you. But you were born to rub me first.
What do you need my address for?
We'd like to send out a mailer.
Mother of mercy, I don't speak Japanese!